Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. The arts play a prominent and vibrant role in St. Louis life, from painters to poets, from photographers to performers and beyond. Our region has a fine reputation for recognizing and supporting the arts. Sometimes that does not extend financially to the artists themselves, many of whom struggle to make a living solely from their talent. A recent survey commissioned by the Regional Arts Commission and conducted by the Center for the Study of Art and Community revealed a lot about our creative population. The so-called Artist Count Survey had responses from 3,000 of our creative artists. Today we're going to talk about what was learned from the survey and how what we learned will be put to use. Joining me in studio, Jill McGuire, Executive Director of the Regional Arts Commission. William Cleveland is the Director of the Center for the Study of Art and Community. Thanks so much for being with us, both of you. Nice to see you again.
Thank you. Good morning.
Jill, you're almost beside yourself. I can tell you're so excited about what's going on. But let's start at the beginning and background this initially. Why did you feel such a survey was needed?
About a year ago, more than a year ago, Don, we completed a long-range plan, a visionary plan, and our number one goal in that plan is vitality. We want to, A, increase and make sure St. Louis remains vital with the arts, through the arts, but we also want to talk about this nationally. We know that we have an amazing artistic environment, and we think that it needs more national prominence. And so one of the strategies under that vitality goal is to really look at our funding programs and what is going to really support the artists. And one of the main ways that we have not been able to do is provide support for individual artists. So we thought, well, let's look at what that community looks like. Let's look at what they say their wants, needs, desires, et cetera. How do they work? You know, what is the artistic ecosystem of St. Louis? And that's when we decided to do the Artist Count Survey.
I want to turn to Bill and talk about specifics of the survey in a moment, but let me ask you why an arts community is so important to a community.
Well, I think many reasons. I think probably the first reason for me is the creativity, is the entrepreneurship, is the rich cultural happenings that it gives to a community. That it's really what makes, to me, what makes community. You know, you can live somewhere, but if you don't have that artistic, if you don't have those things to do, the theater and the museums and the galleries and the zoos and all of those things, that's what makes community. Number two, as we know, the arts really are a major economic impact. And the arts in St. Louis account for more than 14,000 jobs. We have greater than $500 million economic impact in our region. So if you look at that combined, to me, they're very significant.
Bill, let's turn to you now and get some ideas about this survey. 3,000 people. Some folks might be surprised that we have that many in the arts community here in St. Louis.
Well, actually, I'd say that was the tip of the iceberg. Mm-hmm. That in a survey of this kind, that is a robust participation, but sometimes it takes 2 and 3 years of the word getting out, that more and more people who identify as artists and are creators actually think that it's worth their while to respond to. And I should say that the survey we created was very extensive. So the artists who participated spent significant time and were very thoughtful in their responses. So the data is more than just a kind of one-off few questions. There were actually 7 parts to it, so it covered many aspects of being an artist.
Did you go in with any preconceived notions or preconceived expectations?
Well, actually, the structure of the survey was based on other research that had been done, so we weren't starting from scratch. But no, actually. I mean, I suppose if there was any preconceived notions, it is that artists are not monolithic in the way they represent themselves, what's important to them, how they make their living, how they survive. And so, Jill mentioned this earlier, is that actually understanding artists requires an understanding of the complex interdependence of the artist ecosystem, which is much more interesting than just an artist sitting in a studio.
Which is why someone like yourself would conduct such a survey, because it might not be nearly as complete if it were done by just a professional survey person.
Right. And I mean, I'm very happy to be able to say that I'm a maker. I'm a musician and a writer as well as a researcher. Mm-hmm. And so I have a vested interest in my colleagues' stories being out in the world, and that people really understand the extraordinary capacities that artists bring to communities that are often not well understood.
Jill, did you go into this whole project with any preconceived expectations?
I didn't. We really wanted to find out what artists said they, how they worked, and what they needed, and kind of what were their priorities. I think one of the things that came out of it, which I hadn't thought about going into it, was that of all the artists, the 3,000 artists, artists hire people. They hire other artists and they hire people to work for them and with them. And so they indeed produce jobs. And I found that very interesting. The 3,000 artists say that they produced well over 4,000 jobs. So I found that interesting.
Mm-hmm. Who are the artists? How broad a spectrum do we have here, Bill?
Well, I mean, all of the disciplines and more, I guess I could say. So you have obviously performing arts, visual artists, media artists, literary artists. But increasingly, artists are self-defining across disciplines. So you may have many people who define themselves as multidisciplinary or interdisciplinary. The digital world is opening up all kinds of opportunities for artists to express themselves. They live in all 57 of the zip codes of the city and county of St. Louis. And actually, one thing that I think most people don't imagine is that, in fact, all of those artists are, in fact, small business people. They're sole proprietors. And so the way they operate is as very small creative incubators.
Just to make sure that our audience understands exactly what you've just said, full and part-time painters, writers, dancers, poets, filmmakers, musicians, photographers, graphic designers, actors, singers, composers, architects, performance artists, crafters, arts educators, videographers, and others.
And it's others.
It's hard to believe that we missed somebody with that list. Okay. One of the things that struck me was right at the top of the report that I read is the fact that a lot of these people from the groups that I've just mentioned here don't make an awful lot of money doing what they do.
That is true. And this is true across the country. It's not unique to St. Louis. Almost 50% of them are individually, in their individual enterprises, making $25,000 or less. There are artists who are earning more money than that. The other thing I think it's important to recognize is that $25,000 or that $50,000 or $35,000 often is as a result of multiple gigs, multiple enterprises. So it's not just, you know, a one-dimensional kind of thing. And so when you look at it, there's a level of entrepreneurship and enterprise that artists exhibit that is pretty extraordinary. The other thing about income levels, though, is that actually when you look at the family income level for artists, they tend to actually compare evenly, favorably, with the rest of the general population. But probably the hidden part of the artist ecosystem is that family support and the family and friends that are really behind the artist that people don't often recognize or see.
Mm. So it's a tough go. I mean, can I call it a struggle for most of them?
You know, it's interesting. I think when you put those numbers on the wall, you would imagine that most of them would define themselves as strugglers, but they're very much the opposite. And I think part of the reason is that there is another definition of profit or capital, and I don't want to over-romanticize this, but primary motivation for artists is to find time to make work because of their passion and involvement in the work. And so I know most of them would like to make a little more money doing what they do.
Well, finding the time has to be an issue because in order to economically exist better than they would on $25,000 a year, they probably have to do other things. So the artist part of it, the performance, whatever we want to call it, takes or is given much less of their time.
Well, in actual fact, in this profession and many others, but particularly as artists, independent entrepreneurial artists, money and time are intrinsically connected. Mm-hmm. And often what you have is artists who spend a fairly good portion of their time maybe doing something other than art, and then they have what I will call stolen time, which is time above and beyond the 30 hours of a regular everyday job in which they spend in their studio doing rehearsals, working with colleagues, and doing the research and the reflection that is required of long-term arts practice.
Jill, does this drive people out of the arts?
I think that it may. I don't think I can really answer that. But what I think we found out with the survey said people, the artists are called to do artwork. It's like one artist said, art chose me, you know, and this is what I do. So it doesn't drive them out of the field. I think there are times, Dom, when artists do get full-time positions to support their family, and they have almost no time to make artwork for a period in their life, but they come back to it. And I know a lot of people who have come back to making their artwork, say, in their later years or when their kids are grown. I think that artists are particularly tenacious, and they really they don't get a lot of sleep because sometimes they, Bill used that good word, stolen time. They steal time to make their art.
Bill, what are some of the other areas? I'm going to take a break in a moment. Just give me an idea of some of the other areas we'll be talking about when we come back.
Well, I think one of the interesting things is the number of ways in which artists connect to their audiences are much more varied and much more interesting and diverse than one might imagine.
Well, we'll pick up on that point when we come back. You have just heard from Bill Cleveland, the director of the Center for Study of Art and Community here in St. Louis. Jill McGuire also with us. She is the executive director of the Regional Arts Commission, and we're talking about the Artist Count Survey just completed by Mr. Cleveland. And we'll talk about the findings and what these findings will lead to. I think there's some very exciting news coming, particularly for those in the arts community, a little later in this program. So stay tuned. We'll come back and continue our conversation. If you'd like to be a part of it, come on in. Are you an artist, a creative? What are the financial and other problems you face and problems you'd like to see solved? Perhaps we can help along those lines before the end of this program. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back as we continue our conversation about the arts in St. Louis. And we are focusing on a survey called Artists Count Survey. And it has just been completed, and a lot of interesting observations in the survey. With me in studio to talk about it is Bill Cleveland, director of the Center for the Study of Art and Community, an organization which conducted this survey. Jill McGuire is also with us, executive director of the Regional Arts Commission, the organization that commissioned the survey. Bill, let's go back to you. You mentioned just before the break the ways you found interesting in which artists connect with their audiences.
Yeah, we gave artists an opportunity to self-define the ways they connected to audiences. Typically, people get multiple choice questions in these surveys, but we asked them to actually be creative and define them. And then we coded them. And what we found is that, I mean, obviously every artist has at least one avenue, which are fairly typical or traditional. You know, they perform on the stage, they sell their work in a gallery, something like that. But actually, 72% of these artists used more than one. And these ranged from the traditional that I just mentioned to also places like shopping centers. The internet is a really growing area. It's literally becoming a marketplace for the exchange of creative ideas. And one artist actually even mentioned that he found that dog shows were becoming a really good outlet for his artwork. So I think one of the things I think this points out is that these folks are not sitting on their hands. They are as creative in their connection to community and audience as they are in their studios and their artwork.
Well, I have to wonder how whoever responded that way about the dog shows learned that and found that this is,
exactly.
Hey, I can take advantage of this.
Absolutely.
It does show a certain higher degree of creativity, yeah. does it not?
Yes.
Does it not? Well, what else? What else have you got there?
Well, one of the interesting things is that obviously we asked artists what were the most critical issues. What do they need to thrive? And they were very specific in identifying that opportunities to work as an artist is the most basic thing. If you're not making art, you're not being an artist. Another one was this issue of space. Different artists need different kinds of space. Some of them need multiple kinds of space, rehearsal space, performance space, studio space. And 43% actually expressed an interest for combining living and working, live-work space, as it is mm-hmm. often called, which is interesting. And I think it tells you something about the potential for growth in that area. In terms of connecting to audiences, we also asked artists to identify, so how many times a year do you actually do an event that connects you to audiences? Mm-hmm. And if you think about the range of artists, all those 3,000 artists, some of them very part-time, some of them full-time, they average between 15 and 20 public events a year. If you multiply that by 3,000, mm-hmm. it's a lot of work going out there. And the final thing, which is not surprising, which is the issue of funding. And I think I'm not surprised by this, but some others might be, is that there was no sense of entitlement on the part of artists. All they really cared about is being compensated at a reasonable level with some level of predictability. And predictability sort of accrues back to that issue of time, which is if they have to manage a kind of cookie-cutter life, They need dependable relationships, particularly with funding.
Sure. Jill, what kind of support exists right now for artists with regard to some of the things we've been talking about?
I think there's a lot of support through our nonprofit system. Our nonprofit organizations, of course, hire artists and give them opportunity to show their work and present their work. But for specific funding for individual artists, you can apply for national fellowships, Don. You can apply for some small grants, maybe statewide. You know, you have to find those sources. But I know, speaking for the Regional Arts Commission, we have not made funds available specifically for individual artists. And I think after reading this survey, we had made a commitment. The results of the study will affect our policies. And so looking at this and looking at the fact that artists need time, and artists, of course, they need some steady source of income, or they need small sources of income so they can get things done, we have made it's very exciting that we have made a decision to create artist fellowships and an artist support grant pool for individual artists. That is the first time we're making this announcement today on your station.
Ta-da!
Ta-da!
Okay, all right. Well, let's go ahead and make it then. I was going to kind of hold off on that and have the excitement build, if you will. But this is why you're so excited, I know, and Bill too.
Right.
Yeah.
We are announcing tonight at the Sheldon at 5:30 that we will award 10 $20,000 fellowships, and that we have created an artist support grant pool of $75,000. Now, that's the artist grant pool is for requests from $500 up to $3,000, requests for anything that the artist might need. And we are announcing those two grant programs tonight. At this point, we still have not formed an advisory committee for the fellowship awardees, and we don't have the process of the criteria in place. We hope to award the fellowships in early summer, and then the artist support grants, we hope to start that in at least several months.
The artist support grant, the special needs grant, $500 to $3,000 for whatever they feel they have to have to proceed.
There's a whole variety of needs. I think sometimes equipment gets broken and you need to replace it. Sometimes you need to take that trip to New York or that trip south to visit with a gallery director. Sometimes you need to paint your space. Sometimes you need equipment. It's that whole spectrum of artists' needs, what they need to do their work and to be creative.
Now, the $75,000 that you mentioned is just
a pool
for this particular group. The 10 times $20,000, which according to my limited math comes out to $200,000, where is that coming from, and is that going to be an ongoing thing year to year?
We absolutely intend it to be an ongoing thing from year to year. That is coming from last year in 2012. The Regional Arts Commission, you know, gets their funding from the hotel tax, and in 2012 the hotel tax reached the highest level that it had reached in 26 years. That combined with us being frugal, we had money and we knew that we wanted to do something. So that money comes from our revenues.
Any strings attached to the $20,000?
I'm sure because this is the first time we're doing the program that we will probably have, you know, like a midterm meeting. It's a year fellowship. We will want to know what effect that this has had on your work and, you know, talk about it, and there will be maybe some written things about what you're doing with the fellowship.
It's early on, and I understand you don't have it all written out, but would it be okay to assume that they're pretty much going to be able to use it as needed to pursue their artistic career?
Absolutely.
Okay. Bill, how does this all sound to you?
Well, given that at the end of the report, it's nice to know that some of the recommendations that you put on the table actually end up being turned into action. And I would just say that when I put my research hat on, I am often prepared for a thick report sitting on a shelf and gathering dust. I will say that my work with the Regional Arts Commission has been exactly the opposite, is that they don't put out a lot of effort like this without having a real goal, a real concrete goal in mind.
Well, we've all been around long enough to know that sometimes in the region there our reports are issued and they do gather a lot of dust and go into a drawer, and there's a lot of hoopla when it is first announced, and then nothing happens. Jill, I know that you know about this because of your experience in government going way back. I have more questions, but I want to get the audience into the program. And we'll do that now by bringing in Ron, calling from St. Louis. Ron, go ahead. You're on the air.
One of the things that is occurring right now, which is quite exciting, is there is an organization that has put together a group of not-for-profits and is capable of providing health insurance on the large group, like the 1,500-person group. Policy rate. I believe the company's mission group, but if everybody worked for a Regional Arts Commission, they could. Regional Arts Commission could belong to the group, and then you would get big group rates. You know, for those people that are independent artists, there is no way that they can afford health insurance. Well, here is a way. You might want to talk about that.
Yeah, and actually, we did ask. So how's your health insurance circumstance? And a little more than 20% are not covered. What that does tell us is that other members of the family or some part-time job is probably providing those 80% with health insurance. But that's a hefty number. And many artists actually work in circumstances in which their health and their ability to produce art are intrinsically connected. And so one of the things that has been a constant and regular issue in the arts community is getting affordable and accessible care to artists. And so the program that Ron just described is exactly the kind of creative approach that is, I know that has happened in other jurisdictions. Obviously the jury is out on how the new legislation is going to affect you know, the artist community. But this is a significant issue.
If I understood Ron correctly, Jill, he was basically suggesting that the insurance be run through an organization such as yours, making it a group effort. Is that something that the REC has ever given any thought to?
We have looked into it, for 20 years and would be absolutely willing to consider it again. We have a very knowledgeable insurance person that works with us, and the group has to be so large. But I don't I think it's something that we would look into.
You know, this health insurance thing really is just the roadblock for so many people in so many different areas, and so important. It has to be one of the first things considered before any steps are taken in today's economy. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that sounds like a good idea to me, Ron. Thanks very much for your call. We'll take more calls, 382-8255 or 382-TALK. Send an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. We'll take a tweet at STL on air. You can also reach us through Facebook. Let's go back to the survey. What is left for us to discuss there, Bill?
Well, one thing I think that is kind of interesting is that, you know, we did ask some subjective questions. Why are you doing this? Where does that persistence mm-hmm. come from? And artists were very articulate on this point. Obviously, the word passion shows up a lot. But we were actually able to kind of categorize the different motivating forces. And there were really four big ones. One of them was this idea of exploration, of being an explorer and discovery through experimentation. The idea of being an innovator and being in control of the materials that you're using to innovate. There's another one that often doesn't get articulated a lot, which is this idea of synthesis, taking existing ideas and combining them in unique ways. And the final one is this idea of translation, which is making something that may be complicated or that may not be well known more accessible to a larger audience, mm-hmm. This is kind of the theory of art making that artists don't talk about a lot, but we're very forthcoming in our surveys.
I'm making an assumption here that they must have been very, very happy to have the opportunity to have their voices heard, because it's hard to pull together a group like this who are off in so many different directions. Was that expressed at all by the folks you talked to?
Well, actually, if I handed you this survey, I think probably the average person would look at it and say, you know, not today. Thank you very much. it's a pretty extensive survey. And so the fact of the robust participation really tells us a lot. I know that the Regional Arts Commission is going to open up participation again so that we continue to gather data. And I'm hoping that as a result of you know, all this information being shared, that there will be another layer and level of artists that come to the fore.
Go ahead,
Jill. Right. For further information, and as you want to follow as we announce when the fellowships, you know, when that opens and when the artist support grants are open, you can go to artistcount.com. And you can click on there for further information. You can get the entire study online. You can get the executive summary of the study online. You can also take the survey. If you're an artist out there and you haven't taken the survey, we've reopened it.
Thank God for online capability. You know, it really enables you to draw a lot more people into the process. Let's go back to the phones and bring in John, who has been waiting for a few minutes. Thanks for waiting, John. Go ahead.
Sure. I just wanted to talk about the earlier caller talked about how health insurance can be prohibitive for artists and other expenses that people don't think about maybe as accounting and legal. And I just wanted to, you know, plug this organization, the Volunteer Lawyers and Accountants for the Arts. They've done a lot for me in pro bono legal and accounting work that helped me get my art off the ground.
John, thanks so much for the call. Well, I have to confess, I've never heard of this particular outfit, Jill, but you guys have.
Right. The Volunteer Lawyers and Accountants for the Arts are housed in the Regional Arts Commission. And so they have been our partners for 26 years in providing services specifically for individual artists. And they are an amazing group. And part of the recommendations of the Artist Count survey is clearly to do the fellowships and to do some small grants, but we also want to do technical assistance. We also want to, you know, do those kinds of workshops that will help artists and fulfill some of their needs in that way, too. And we definitely are going to partner with volunteer lawyers and accountants for the arts.
You had mentioned off the air that you have a training program of some sort through the Regional
right.
Arts Commission.
We have a community arts training institute that takes artists, only 8 artists and 8 non-artists every year, and puts them together to learn how to work well, how to, you know, learn how to work in the community, understand how each side works. And so we've been doing that. We have over 280 graduates of that particular institute.
Bill, does your survey show that there is a real need for this sort of thing?
Well, actually, I think one of the most interesting and exciting things about this survey is that it provides evidence that the Regional Arts Commission's long-term commitment to this kind of training has borne fruit. I work across the country, and St. Louis is increasingly being recognized as a hotspot for art and community development cross-sector work. And largely because of this kind of leadership. It doesn't happen on its own. It happens because of intentional programs like this.
The initiative that you're going to be announcing again later today, Jill, is this sort of thing going on anyplace else?
There are different arts agencies, of course, that offer fellowships. Mm-hmm. And your big foundations offer major fellowships. Mm-hmm. But it's the first time on a scale like this that it's been offered locally in St. Louis for local artists.
And you had also indicated you're going to have 600 people there tonight?
Yes. We hope. We're going to be really excited to meet everyone.
What does that tell you, Bill, 600 people showing up for an event like this?
Well, that this is a community that's hungry to connect to each other and hungry to hear good news, and particularly in the artist community. Another thing I think is important to recognize is that we talk about artists, but this ecosystem, the cultural ecosystem, the survival and the capacity of small and mid-sized and large organizations is all dependent on the creative capacities that artists have. And so they're all mutually interdependent. So I have no doubt that there will be representatives from many of your constituent organizations there as well, because this is good news for them,
sure.
Them too.
And it's also important for community support, too. I mean, if people don't show up to the various exhibits or performances or what have you, then it's all for naught, I guess. Anyway, we have to take a break. Let's do that now. In studio with me is Jill McGuire, Executive Director of the Regional Arts Commission. I'm also across the table from William Cleveland, the Director of the Center for the Study of Art and Community. We're talking about the Artist Count Survey, which has surveyed our arts community to find out what its needs are. And not surprisingly, one of the big needs is the fact that a lot of these people don't make too much money, and they would like to have more support, and they're going to get it, as we have learned. We'll be back in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again. Welcome back to our conversation about arts and artists in our community, what the artists are thinking, what they need, and what we have learned as a result of the Artist Count Survey, which was conducted last year. Some 300 members of the arts community participated in that survey. William Cleveland, director of the Center for Study of Art and Community, conducted that survey for the Regional Arts Commission. Mr. Cleveland is with us in studio, as is Jill McGuire, executive director of the Regional Arts Commission. Having said that and reintroduced our guests, let's go back to the phones and bring in Ed calling from St. Louis. Go ahead, Ed. You're on the air.
I'd like to commend Mr. Cleveland for the words he said. I have a 38-year-old son who is a successful musician. And the only reason he is because his mom and me were able to back him up. And he is having a better life than either his mom or me. But I want to say this about that, is that he gets his inspiration after the show. And then he goes jamming with his friends. And that's when he really learns, because he has to come down from that. And that is the scary part of art, that you got to come down from being so high. And that is the scary part. And but he's having a better life than I had when I was 38.
Ed, thank you so much for the call. Well, that's what parents are supposed to do, aren't they? Help their children have a better life than they did.
Absolutely. But I actually, it's interesting. If you think about, we live in a society where, families get separated out and people move far away. But for so many of the artists that we have talked to, it really is one of the ties that bind, which is the creative endeavor. The artist themselves has a network of, dozens of people around them that care about the work and are fed by it, spiritually and emotionally. And I think we tend to think of artists as loners, but in fact there's a whole cast of characters on stage with the artists that often are not noticed.
Is this something you just perceived as being an artist yourself, or is it something that was made very clear by the survey?
Probably the greatest motivation I have for doing this kind of work is that how and why artists do the work that they do and how their ecosystems function is not something that's been looked at very much. And we tend to think of artists as sort of individuals, separate and alone. And so the more we actually are able to see this complex interdependence and the gifts and the mutual benefits that come from this. Actually, there's an interesting survey, an interesting piece of research coming from the University of Pennsylvania Social Impact of the Arts Project that basically says that the higher the concentration of artists and arts organizations, particularly in low-income communities, the greater the reduction in poverty, the lower the transiency rate and the greater the civic involvement of the people in the community. Mm-hmm. And this is laid in large part to the sort of organic, informal web of relationships that artists weave in their work.
Mm-hmm. Did you want to add something, Jill? You look like you were ready to say something.
I agree with what Bill's saying. What I really think that is so important is how artists do work in community, and we often don't see that. We often don't even know, perhaps, that we have three or four artists on our street or in our neighborhood. And community development through the arts, creative community development, has opened up a whole new role for artists to play, and that I've seen it change. I've seen the artist's role change, I think, dramatically in the last 25 years. And our perceptions haven't changed that much. And I think that's what Bill's saying. You think of an artist, you think of them in their studio or in a practice room. But our artists today are really in our community, mm-hmm. working with our kids and teaching in our schools.
And giving a lot of their talent, I would think, too, if they can't find that gig. At least they want to continue doing what they do, and if they have to do it for nothing, they do it.
Right.
Yeah, and actually another interesting thing coming from the survey is that teaching is a very important part of artists' lives for two reasons. Number one, their sustenance there, but the other one is that for as long as artists have existed in our communities, one of the artists' roles is passing on the legacy of their practice to newcomers. So 65% of the people we surveyed actually identified that they are, in fact, teaching their art form.
Most interesting, most interesting. Back to the phones. Let's bring in Pete calling from St. Louis. Go ahead, Pete.
Yeah, I guess I live here in St. Louis now. I'm internationally known for my eyes and a lot of public art that I'm doing. I have met with Jill. This is Pete Wallager, by the way.
Hi, Pete.
And we've talked about a lot of things that St. Louis has to offer. What an amazing place it is for people like myself to be. And I was in Chicago doing commercial art, making great, great money. And, part of my motivation for coming to St. Louis is because I get a $200 studio that, in other cities would be, $2,000 maybe. And it really... It's a great time to be an artist because you have the internet. And I really do love St. Louis, but I am struggling. I have three kids, they have health benefits. And I'm ecstatic to see, you know, especially this individual artist grant, because I think it's so important, because a lot of artists, they're doing well in their career and they're still struggling. And, you know, I think for us to be thriving in this community in St. Louis and nationally or wherever, is it's nice to have a little bit of support. And, you know, I took the survey and I really was excited to see that happen. And, you know, I just think it's very, you know, and I think a lot of artists are going through this struggle. I have friends in New York and LA that are just even worse off than me. And they are, you know, I think this would be a very appetizing place for them to come to, because you can get these great studios on Cherokee Street and on Maplewood and live well. I have three kids. I own my house, you know, but it's a day-to-day struggle, you know. And but it is exciting to me to see what you know, hopefully there's some efforts to kind of keep those things going, because there's been times that I'm like, uh-oh, I better go back to that agency again and work for other people, and which is great, but like truly, you know, like when I'm creating my art and doing these large murals, sometimes free, sometimes getting commissioned, you know, I feel like I'm changing neighborhoods, and I hope that that's a trend that we continue to see in St. Louis.
Pete, thanks so much for the call. If you were in studio, you'd be getting high fives right now. I can assure you of that. Jill, you obviously know Pete. And is this a fairly typical story?
I think it is fairly typical. I think Pete is successful, very successful. So I would hope that it is typical, that he said he is getting by and it's a struggle. And I'm hoping that this is exactly the kind of programming that will help these kinds of artists.
How about you, Bill, following your survey? Does this sound like the kind of things you were hearing?
Yeah, and one of the things that he mentioned was the kind of creative synergy that's popping up in various neighborhoods in St. Louis. Cherokee Street, one example. This is the kind of thing that you can't organize. It actually has to happen organically. And St. Louis is one of those places in the country where available space, the cost of living, the presence of colleagues in various disciplines make it very attractive to artists. And this program will up the ante. And you'll be getting a new crop of, I think, highly functioning artists coming to town as a result of this.
I think we'll take a call now from Con, calling from St. Louis, which will continue this part of the conversation. Con, go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Hi, Bill. Hi, Jill. Con Christensen.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, I just want to sort of support what Pete just said about struggle, but also to say that I think many people don't realize that artists are entrepreneurs, that they're self-employed, and that even if it's not a struggle, it's necessary for constant vigilance, like what's next, where do I go, who am I going to work with, et cetera. And the support that my organization and many other artists get from the Regional Arts Commission as a funder is phenomenal. And the training that the Regional Arts Commission offers to the Community Arts Training Institute, and most recently the Tiger Program, which 12 of us had the privilege of completing in December, there just isn't anything like that as far as I know. Other people from other cities and other countries that I talk to this about are really interested in what we're doing here in St. Louis. So I just want to say thanks, and thanks for all the good stuff, all the good work.
Well, thank you so much for the call. We have a tweet from Tom who's saying that Sloop should come up during today's program. Sloop's a local organization which sponsors a monthly soup dinner in St. Louis, which supports artistic and communicative artists. Are you familiar with that?
Yes. And that's, Don, I just want to say, Sloop should come up. And I'm sitting here and I should mention like 30 other individual artist support groups. That's why we talk about the ferment and the creativity in St. Louis. I mean, it is here. And that's why it's important to really put some money where your mouth is. I mean, we have a very robust artistic environment in St. Louis. And it's exciting.
You know, there seems to be a new impetus for some reason. I'm not sure what it is, that a lot of these things are surfacing. We've done programs here, for instance, with organizations like Rally St. Louis,
right,
which is really bringing a lot of things together. How do these things all get tied together, or do they? Is it through an organization like yours, Jill, or is there some way to make sure that everybody's communicating?
It's, I think, a very good question, Don, and I thought a lot about it. I was on the advisory board for Rally St. Louis, but they provide an opportunity for people with ideas to put them out there and get voted on, right? And then hopefully to raise some cash and really implement that idea. And I've thought a lot about this. There is so much going on in St. Louis that it's very hard for everyone to know everything and for all of us to stay connected. So I think it's the best way is probably through the internet and through Facebook and social media. But it, to me, it's equally as exciting that there are different initiatives popping up and they are unconnected.
But it would be helpful, it would seem to me, if there were some way to connect them and make sure that everybody kind of knows what's going on. That's just my opinion, and nobody really cares about it. But I'll express it anyway.
We care.
I'm in front of a microphone. let's take another call. As time allows, we'll bring in Mike calling from Webster Groves. Mike, go ahead.
I have a comment and a question. One comment I had is, you know, there's a local auction house, Ivy Selkirk, and they, you know, I had an artist in there telling me one time it's important for artists to have a presence online. So if you just sell one thing, you know, you'll start creating like a history of your work, and then you become more known and peck away at your art sales like that. And I was just wondering if the Regional Arts Commission helps artists do that. And then the other question, I guess I have two questions, is how does somebody be considered an artist? Like, do you have to go to art school, or how are they rated, you know, for getting the funds from you guys? And that's it.
The artists are self-defined. We, at this point, I don't have the exact criteria for the fellowships, but we, for the survey, you would self-define as a, quote, creative or as an artist. And we will be refining perhaps some of the criteria to apply for the fellowships. But pretty much if you have some body of work that says you're creative or that you're an artist, we will accept that. It's not based on a degree that says, you know, I've got my degree from art school. Secondly, I wanted to say real quickly, address the selling online. The Regional Arts Commission today doesn't really have a program that helps with that. However, I think that when we talk about programs that we want to do in the future, I think that is a really hot topic. And I know that the volunteer lawyers and accountants can talk about that, because you need to understand how you handle copyright and those kind of issues.
I don't think we have time to take this call, but Gary in McKinley Heights is asking, I believe, about programs for artists on the business of arts. Mm-hmm. And that is, you know, it's one thing to create something, because another thing to, it's your business now. You have to deal with it that way. What about that idea, Bill?
Well, I think many artists probably listening to this understand that their studio program in the university or the conservatory did not prepare them for the business part of the art making. And the organization that was mentioned earlier, which is St. Louis Lawyers and Accountants Volunteers for the Arts, is one of those places for where they can get that. My sense is this will become a bigger issue, and as is this idea of becoming technologically literate, it's going to be more important for artists to reach audiences in a multiple ways, and that's going to be an important aspect.
Right. Can I just add a real quick?
Oh, absolutely. Sure.
We've partnered with at Washington University. They have the Scandalera Center, which is a center that teaches entrepreneurial skills, and it is an amazing center. So all you have to do is Google Scandalera Center. They offer free programs and free training, and it's amazing. And we're offering an entrepreneurial grant with them through that center.
And your event tonight at 5:30, I think it is. Everyone welcome who's associated with the arts community?
Yes, everyone's welcome.
When and where?
5:30 tonight at the Sheldon. And it will be a presentation from 6:15 to 7 and then mingling till 8. It's
Alrighty.
About 5:30 to 8.
All right, a final thought from you, Bill?
Just that it's been really an honor and a privilege to have been part of what I think is groundbreaking work here in St. Louis. And this is, at least in terms of this work, this is the epicenter of, you know, of artist development.
Well, it's very, very exciting. And I know you guys are most excited about it, as well you should be. And our arts community should be as well, because we're talking about stipends of $20,000 down the line for lucky artists in our community. We'll be hearing more about that in the next days, I'm sure. Jim McGuire of the Regional Arts Commission, thank you so much for being with us. And Bill Cleveland, Director of the Center for the Study of Art and Community, thanks so much. Congratulations on your hard work in putting together that survey. Thank you both. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, it's primary election day in the city of St. Louis, so we'll check in to see how things are going at the polls. Then we'll talk with Kevin Colleen about his novel, Never Hug a Nun, which is based on his experience growing up in Webster Groves in the 60s. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.